Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. We're talking Lakers basketball here today. It is the off season for LA. Unfortunately, Lakers came up short in game four. We'll talk a little bit about that, the conclusion of the Lakers season, but obviously we've got a lot of off-season topics to get into as well. The Rob Pelinka, JJ Redick press conference, we'll talk about general off-season talk. We'll be taking a lot of questions and comments from you here live in the chat as well. If you haven't done so yet, please make sure you hit the subscribe button on the YouTube channel. I'm Trevor Lane. He's Jovan Buha. Jason Timpf is at the Chicago Draft Combine, so he is not with us for today's show. Jovan. You and I holding down the show today.
Yes, sir. We miss Jason, but we will have to carry on like a big two going without the big three for a game. We got a lot to get into. It's only been a few days since we last went live, but so much stuff has happened with game four. You had the Rob JJ press conference and all the exit interviews. And then you've also had a couple crazy days of off-season news and content with the Lakers. So it's always busy in Lakerland, especially after the season concludes.
Yeah, I'm sure you get this too. I get a lot of people though that are, you know, maybe basketball adjacent or not as tuned into the league as certainly you and I are, that as soon as the season ends, they make comments like, man, it's going to be really nice for you to take a break, though, isn't it? Now that the season's up, I'm like, hell no. It gets way busier right now this time of year, especially once we get into June, we get into the draft, we get into free agency. No rest for the wicked here, that's for sure.
No. We are tied to the NBA schedule. Maybe this is a little TMI, but my wife and I have been discussing having a baby or at some point here in the next year or so. And I've made it clear we could only have a baby between July and September. That's how it works with my schedule.
Oh, trying to plan out life around the NBA schedule. Gotta love that. All right, let's get into some of the questions. I'm not going to take that a step further. Let's get into some of the questions, some of the comments around the Lakers and Thunder game four. I don't think we need to do a deep dive into the X's and O's of the game or anything like that. I could say you and I both said going into this one, what we wanted to see from the Lakers in game four was fight. No matter what, we wanted to see them, if they're going to go down swinging. And I thought they did a great job doing just that. Had opportunities to potentially win the game down the stretch, came up short. But I left that game feeling like, okay, they left it all out there on the floor. It wasn't like midway through the game, they let go of the rope and said, screw it, let's go on vacation. They fought all the way through to the final buzzer.
It was exactly what I wanted to see. It was exactly what we discussed going into game four when we previewed it. The Lakers gave the Thunder the best punch that they have taken so far in the playoffs. The Thunder had not trailed in the fourth quarter in the postseason until game four against the Lakers. So not only are they undefeated, but the first seven games, they led the entire fourth quarter in all of those games, right? So we saw the Lakers, and JJ pointed this out after the game, and as I thought more about it, like he was completely right in that there was a couple points in that game. And I would say midway through the second quarter and early in the third quarter, where the Lakers could have just let go of the rope. OKC opens the second quarter with that 17-0 run and they're back up. I think they get up 12 at one point over there, that stretch. Then third quarter, OKC comes out and is hitting everything, right? And Rui hits a few jumpers to come out of the half. But OKC hits like their first, or I want to say they score like first five of seven possessions coming out of halftime. And it's like all of a sudden it goes from being, I think they're up four at the half to now it's around 10, 12 points again. So the Lakers could have let go of the rope at that point. Not only did they not in both instances, but like, second quarter, they outscored OKC 19-11 I think it got to 12. They outscored them 19-11 over the second half of the second quarter. They're down four at the half. Then third quarter, they respond with their own run to not only make it a game, but to actually have a lead going into the fourth quarter. And it's the first time that OKC trails, but it wasn't just the beginning of the quarter. It was throughout the quarter as they were trading buckets and it was going back and forth. So disappointing in the sense that like the Lakers did not get the win, and certainly some tough misses, some tough turnovers, and OKC just, it was eerily reminiscent of the Denver series, where it felt like OKC just like caught every break, made every shot. And it was like when the Lakers in 2023 and 2024 were playing Denver, it felt like no matter how well the Lakers played in crunch time, Denver would match, out execute them and just match them. And they just had a magnet ball, couldn't miss anything. Similar thing where OKC, every shot they're taking, they're either making or getting the offensive rebound. And there was the whole thing with Chet traveling and whatnot. So it was just a really tough break for LA. But I thought the way that they fought in that game was representative of their entire season, and how no matter how much adversity they faced, they found a way to respond and overcome it and maximize everything they had. And like, based on who was available and just the state of the roster by the end of the season, like them going out on their shield and sword against that OKC team in that way, like I thought it was really impressive. So it's not a moral victory, and we're not saying that, but I did think it was, you wanted to see them go out with fight, and they threw their best punch. It wasn't enough, but now we're in the off season and they got to make some changes.
Yeah, I mean, this is a fourth quarter that saw how many times, I can't even say how many times I saw the Lakers do well defensively, and man, you force them into a contested mid-range and got a good contest up on it, and the ball hits the front of the rim and crawls up over. I believe OKC shot 60% from the field, 50% from three in the fourth quarter. They just hit everything, and it was very reminiscent of a game against the Denver Nuggets, the way those series used to play out, where the Lakers would continue to score and continue to score, and they're scoring, but they just can't quite keep up. You felt like any time if the Lakers missed a shot, even against OKC in that fourth quarter, it was a big, big setback because OKC was just not missing on the other end. And yes, there were opportunities down the stretch, the Chet Holmgren travel that didn't get called, but I'm not going to fault the referee too much on that one. What did you think? A lot of people were very upset, made a lot out of Rui Hachimura not being in that final possession to potentially be an option to shoot that three to try to go for the tie. LeBron missed a shot before that. Thunder came down, got 2 points. Lakers are down three. The ball ultimately turns into an Austin Reeves three. He misses it. Look good out of his hand, goes in and out, and then the Lakers are going to go on to lose the game. But Rui Hachimura was not on the floor. A lot of people upset with J.J. Redick for that decision. What were your thoughts on that, since there was so much made of it?
I mean, Luka seemed to be upset. If you saw that video of Luka reacting to it, I think it was a mistake. I think it was the wrong call by J.J. I think he overthought the situation. What I will note, like it in retrospect with a little bit more processing it or whatever, this is not uncommon for JJ because he prefers Marcus as he settled on Marcus as the inbounder progressively throughout the season, right? There are some times where it was LeBron, and LeBron has had a couple turnover through the years, several turnovers in late game situations with being the inbounder. And so he likes Marcus in that role. And then he also loves Maxi as the screener, right? Like, how many times have we seen Maxi doesn't play in a game, and then it's a late game situation, Maxi comes in for the final play or an ATO, and he's the screener, and he set a good screen and Austin got a good look. I think where this came down to for me ultimately was politics, and just this has happened before. I'm forgetting the game, but there was a game earlier in the season where I think it might have been Luke who people wanted on the floor, and LeBron and Austin. And I think it was LeBron, Austin, Luka, and so maybe it was Rui or Luke, or I forgot who was out. But it was like it was the big three plus Maxi, and then I think Marcus was the inbounder. And the thing I said then, and I'll just say again, like it is tough in some situations to like bench your best players. I think that is. Now your season's on the line and you should be able to do that and have the conversation with them about that, afterward, and it not be like this big thing of, I don't think we would have looked at, taken it as some slight if LeBron or Austin was not out there for that final possession. I think Rui and Luke had to be out there. Then you could pick between LeBron or Austin. I think LeBron ended up, I think he was like 2-for-5, 2-for-6 on threes. Austin was 3-for-6. So like pretty similar shooting nights from deep. But I think the one way you could have gone, if you really cared about the politics with those two, was maybe LeBron or Austin is the inbounder, then the other one's on the floor. Mm-hmm. And then you also have Luke and Rui out there with Maxi as a screener. But I mean, they got a good look out of it. And now we can question, like, should Austin have been the one taking that shot, and should it have been Luke or Rui? Yeah, I mean, I think you would have preferred to have one of those two guys take it. But to me, I just view it as like JJ is very formulaic in some instances, and he prefers Marcus to inbound the ball. He prefers Maxi to be the screener. He does tend to keep the stars out there. And I think it was as simple as that. But clearly, I think it was a mistake.
Yeah, I mean, he's ran stuff before that got the cross-court pass to Austin over the top, and people are questioning, should that be Kennard? Of course, Kennard had the game winner against Orlando. Rui had a game winner against Toronto, both those being three-point shots. I ultimately landed here. I thought he should have pulled Austin, the final defensive possession. You were going to use the timeout anyway and gone with whether it was a Jared Vanderbilt, whoever you want to slot in there. I don't think it changed the result of the play. I don't think they would have gotten a stop otherwise, but I thought there was an opportunity to go offense, defense that he didn't take. And then the final possession, you know, in terms of who's on the floor, you might want to say, well, I wanted Maxi on the floor to be the screener. I wasn't going to trust anyone more than Rui Hachimura in that moment if I knew I was going to get a good look. The only thing I can look at and say, well, you know, OKC tends to blow up the best options. So if OKC blew something up, I'm going to trust Austin or LeBron more than Rui, more than Kennard to create in a scramble situation like that. But if it's, I'm running a play, I know we're going to get a look out of this, I would trust, even over Luke Kennard, I would trust Rui Hachimura's ability to rise up and shoot over the top over LeBron getting the look, over Austin getting the look, just if you're playing the percentages. And it's not even like you can look at it and say, well, but it's a pressure moment and all of that. Rui's been awesome in the playoffs. He already hit a game winner from three on the season. I'm not worried about the pressure of the moment being too big for him. So I thought it was a mistake, but was it a surprise? Was it some egregious error? No, I didn't think it was some absurd. It's not like he said, hey, Jackson Hayes, go launch a three out there or something like that. You got the ball. It was going to go to either LeBron or Austin. You got a good look.
Hit a few this season, Jackson.
That's
percentage wise,
did hit a few. Okay, maybe I should use a different DeAndre Ayton.
Jackson
Hayes, 3-point shooter. But in any event, the season comes to a conclusion, and now we head into what's going to be a very busy offseason. I think, you know, Lakers bias aside, I think the Lakers are one of the most fascinating teams of the summer because of all the different ways they can go. If we want to take a Rob Pelinka term, it's optionality. They've got a lot of different directions that they're going to be able to go this summer. So I'm excited to get into all of that. Let's go. I guess let's talk about Rob and JJ's press conference. Let's go there. A lot was said. A lot of things I agreed with. Some things that I didn't, that was, you know, a little bit concerning. But what were your big takeaways from what Rob Pelinka and JJ Redick had to say during their presser? Was that yesterday? I don't know. Time has lost all meaning at this point. It feels like everything's been a whirlwind.
Tuesday morning.
Okay, 2 days ago.
I would say I left that press conference as encouraged as I've been coming out of one of these exit interviews, because the Lakers have ran it back for the most part in each of the past few seasons, right? Mm-hmm. There's a couple seasons of change there. 2021 is obviously some dramatic change in the offseason with the Russ trade. 2022, half of that roster ends up being out of the NBA. It's still an incredible accomplishment that they put together a roster that half of it was out of, you know, retired by the end of that season. Then, you know, obviously 2022, 23, like they make the Pat Bev trade, then going into the season, then they remake the you know, Kendrick Rui trade and the Russ trade and D'Lo and Vando and all that. Then they get swept in the conference finals and say, well, we have to run it back and see if we maybe make a couple tweaks, what we could do next season. They run it back. They lose in the first round this time to Denver, and then make some pretty much run it back again, like the Notorian Prince, but they swap out Darvin for JJ. They're like, coaching was the problem, not the roster. Then after 2025, they still kind of run it back, although it ends up being DFS leaves, and you add Ayton, Smart, and Laravia, so you're more so shuffling the rotation guys a little bit. But I felt they had, at least what they said optically from a strategy perspective, I agreed with most of it. And so whether you're, you know, they talked about, we want to get younger, we want to get more athletic, we want to get better defensively. JJ, I thought with a really underrated comment on, we need more guys who can dribble, pass, and shoot. And this is a point that I made on my show after that, was like, once you go past the big three plus Marcus and Luke, the rest of the roster, the other 10 players, none of them can do, none of them can dribble, pass, and shoot in all three. So like every one of them has a limitation in at least one of those three categories, if not multiple. And so like they just need a roster that is a little bit more skilled. And so we would see, when you take away one of those five guys, or even a couple of those five guys in some instances, like it really was very concentrated with the remaining guys in terms of the guys that would dribble and pass and shoot and kind of run the offense. And so I think they need to add like two to three more guys that can do that. Just like basic, can be secondary playmakers that like don't even have to be primary guys, but like, can you attack a closeout, make a driving kick read off of that? Can you process the game at a high level and make skip passes? And can you also shoot at least a league average level? Mm-hmm. And then defensively, I would like to see at least half of the rotation be above average defenders, which it was not the case this season. And that's a testament to JJ. He got them to defend at a certain level. But like, I thought the roster stuff was encouraging. You saw Rob's reaction when he started talking about Austin. He started glowing and singing Austin's praises. And like, he made it very clear that there's mutual interest there. And it seems like they're going to find some common ground with the contract. But my biggest takeaway was some of the roster stuff. Like, they talked about needing to get younger. Talked about LeBron and Rui. And so I'm trying to think if there's anything else that stood out, but I think the roster stuff was the stuff I was most interested. Oh, you know, also the assistant GMs, it was nice to hear about that they're going to be revamping the front office and divvying it up in terms of the hats that those GMs are going to be wearing. But I thought it was one of the better ones, because typically they have been preaching the run it back, and there was a little bit of run it back, but not to the level that I think it's been the last few summers.
I think they checked a lot of the boxes of what I've been wanting to hear for years in terms of what they're going to go and really try to accomplish. And that style of play, you didn't hear Rob say, hey, we're going to go get some more small guards who can't defend. We didn't hear that stuff. You were now,
well, he's passion, never explicitly said that. He's never drafted and signed those players.
But the dribble pass shoot stuff, that's, you know, we look at, well, why did Luke Kennard arrive with the Lakers and suddenly everybody goes, wow, this dude's better than we thought? It's not just Luke Kennard and his skill as a basketball player, which is, he is certainly a skilled player, but part of it was contrast. Part of it was, oh, wow, this is another guy that can make a read and can actually get into the paint and read the defense and dribble pass and shoot. So part of it is the lack of those things on the Lakers roster, why Luke Kennard popped so much when he immediately arrived with the Lakers. And so it's good to hear them talk about trying to find those skill sets. I love that Rob said, look, we're looking for three things. We're looking for depth, athleticism, and youth. Yes, 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 right? Those are three things you absolutely have to have in today's NBA. It's easy to say, much more difficult to do to actually add those things, but that's exactly what the team needs to be laser focused on adding: depth, athleticism, youth. This is a young players league. You look at the way the league has gone in terms of the speed. I thought there was a big speed factor for Oklahoma City. And really over the course of the season, the Lakers found themselves at a speed, at an athleticism disadvantage. And so hearing that those are the things they're going to be focused on, I was really, really pleased with what they had to say there. Now, again, actually acquiring those players, that's something that's going to have to play out in June and in July. But still, I love that. I thought JJ had an interesting comment. No, Jovan, you can tell me.
I think I know which one you're going to reference.
Is it about the depth?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I just was looking through my notes, and that was something I talked about on my show. It was interesting that he made that comment sitting 6 feet away from Rob.
Exactly. The question was posed, I don't recall who asked the question. Maybe it was Kobe, but posed the question essentially asking JJ, you know, why didn't you go deeper into your rotation? And JJ made a comment, I'm obviously paraphrasing, it's been a few days, but that the depth isn't the rotation, it's more his roster spots, and essentially implied that the guys deeper on the bench weren't guys that he could really turn to and use, and that you needed usable players all the way through. I think he said something to the effect of your 13th roster spot and everything. Again, I'm not saying the exact thing that he said, I'm paraphrasing, but certainly implied that he didn't go deeper into his rotation because he didn't have guys that he could play. So I thought that was an interesting moment, considering Rob Blink, as you said, Jovan was what, 6 feet away from him at that point.
Yeah, it was. It was an eyebrow raiser for sure. So now that I'm remembering the question, I think it was more along the lines of that JJ often used an 8 or 9 man rotation, and that if you had a deeper roster, would you like to expand, like would the goal be to expand the rotation to 10 guys, 11 guys, 12 guys like OKC? And then that's what prompted him to bring up. And he mentioned with OKC and San Antonio that they both have 13 plus high level rotation players. And then you had, I think it was ESPN's Tim McMahon who reported, I think it was on the Hoop Collective podcast, that he said he spoke to someone with the Lakers and was talking to them about someone, I think on the Lakers coaching staff, and was talking to them about Aaron Wiggins and how Aaron Wiggins is like the 12th, 13th man on OKC and how he basically just doesn't play. And the person that Tim McMahon spoke to said, yeah, well, if he was on our team, he'd be playing 25 minutes a night and he would be one of our top, if not our top, like bench guys. So that just showed you the contrast between the rosters. And this has been a thing for years now. Like I've been thinking about how many times do we leave a Lakers season and we're like, well, it really was the supporting cast just not being good enough. And by the end of the postseason, the coach, whoever was the coach at the time, did not trust more than like 7 guys on the roster to actually play at a playoff level because the remaining guys were either too limited in general or were so problematic on one side of the ball that they just were unplayable. And so I think the biggest thing I want to see from this group, like, I mean, there's a lot we could get into, obviously, with LeBron's future and what's Austin's number and what are the best pieces to put around them in general. But I really think roster depth is going to be really important, but not even just roster depth. It needs to be way more two-way talent. And that's going to be hard to find because the Lakers have been trying to find that for years now, but they need to find guys who can walk and chew gum on both sides of the ball. And I think they've only been able to find guys who can walk and chew gum on one side of the ball. And it's often, you know, it's like they find the defender, but the defender is one of the worst shooters and most limited offensive players in the league. Or they find a shooter or offensive player, but then they're one of the worst defensive players in the league. And it's like, you're not always going to find guys who are above the 50th percentile in both, but can you find the 80th percentile defender who's like a 30th percentile offensive player? Can you find the 80th percentile offensive guy who's a 30th percentile defensive guy? Not 90-10 or 95-5. And I think that they've skewed that a little too dramatically in either direction.
It makes for a difficult challenge when we're talking about whether it's JJ Redick or Darvin Ham. You know, this is now, point is, it's been years where the Lakers coach, whoever it is having to try to mix and match and constantly balance defense and offense. And that's just difficult to do on the fly with the mix of players. And then you've got teams like OKC, like San Antonio, that are just like, eh, all these guys can defend. All these guys can play on offense. Let's figure out what we think, which pieces really fit together, rather than trying to, you know, walk this tightrope of, okay, we've got enough offensive players on the floor, but we don't have enough defensive players, or vice versa. You really have to find that two-way talent. You know, another thing that stood out to me, Rob talked about player development being really huge to lean into, but then I thought it was telling that when he was trying to cite players that they have developed, and he had to go to Rui Hachimura, and he was talking about how veterans can still develop and how even guys that have been in the league for a few years can make progress. And he's not wrong. Rui has absolutely improved as a Laker, and now he's a 50-40 guy for 3 straight years, and he's absolutely made growth. But I thought it was interesting that on a question that was mainly towards the true, like, young players coming to the league, the guy that he had to default to as his example was not one of those, because they've not had success in that area. So I came out of that thinking, yep, that's, if you've got to go to the guy that you got when he was, what, Rui was 25 or 26 years old, as a guy who's made this great developmental growth on your roster, that's not a great sign for what's happened with the young players on the team over the last number of years. So hopefully that can be an area that's addressed as Mark Walter does build out the front office. Rob Pelinka mentioned the two new assistant GMs coming in. That's something that, particularly when I look at the grand scheme of the NBA and the way teams are being put together and the way you need these young players, not just for the athleticism, the speed that a lot of times these young guys possess, but also for the cost control contracts that they have. That moment stood out to me as, yes, they've got to get better in this area when it comes to bringing in young talent, finding guys late. Hell, A.J. Mitchell was a second-round pick. Finding guys in the draft, even if they're not going to have a high pick, finding guys that they can then develop and turn into rotation players. That's an area that I think they've come up short in over the last few years. Certainly, we can talk about the Dalton Kincaid pick, the Jalen Huchefino pick, a number of other players. But to me, that was a notable moment that, been trying to find a positive story to go to in terms of player development, Rob had to go to a guy that they got in his mid-20s already.
I also think to push this point even further a bit, like it was, you had Andy Kamenetsky ask about looking at the three of the top teams in the league right now, OKC, yeah. San Antonio, Detroit, all small market teams, maybe Detroit's closer to like a mid-market, but that built their rosters through the draft and through years of tanking. And Rob basically said, like, that's just not possible in LA. And that's like not a roster approach that we're going to take. And it makes sense in a couple fronts because they're the Lakers and the goal every year is win a championship, but also you have Luka in his prime. So you're not going to rebuild Rob made the point that the hardest thing to do in the draft and rebuild process is to find that player who can be a championship number one. And the Lakers already have that. So now they have to find the rest of the pieces. But I did think that was interesting just because Rob has made the point before that like the Lakers are building the plane in the sky, right? Mm-hmm. And that the offseason is the time to work on the plane. But they kind of are continuing to build the plane in the sky, so to speak, right? And it is like it does feel like that they're still going to be trying to like swap out some of those parts while they're in the air rather than like rebuilding is really landing the plane and like taking the plane apart and then putting it back together and then eventually years from now going off into the sky. The Lakers aren't doing that, but it also feels like they're still going to be sort of rebuilding the plane in the air or taking bits and pieces off and trying. And I just thought like that insight into how they view building a roster was really interesting because it did sound more like we need to preserve like a certain baseline of like trying to be good to a certain level and almost like a little bit more caution with how they view it of like, we can't take some of the big swings or risks necessarily because we want to maintain we're at a certain level. Whereas if you take some of those bigger risks or do try to tank or rebuild, like you are running the risk of just being a really bad basketball team for X amount of time. So it was like interesting to hear that they, because I would also argue like, sure, you don't want to like tank like those teams, but those teams have done an incredible job of managing their assets, managing their contracts, identifying young talent. Like there are a lot of things you should try to emulate from those three teams that I just thought that insight into like how they view the team building process, what was interesting to me.
Yeah. And the word he kept using was retrofit. We're going to retrofit this roster around Luka. And I'm curious to see how exactly they're going to do that. There was a comment that Rob made that sounds great. And if it turns out to be 100% accurate, then phenomenal. We're going to have a great season next year. But the comment was from Rob, we have enough tools to build out a team, adding pieces while also keeping our core. And I've done the math. I've looked at the logistics of trying to make that happen. And that's going to be a very, very difficult thing for the Lakers to do. We talk a lot about, well, nearly $50 million in cap space. That doesn't last that long when most of the best free agents are already Lakers. And you got to bring back Rui. You got to bring back LeBron. You got Kennard is a free agent. Marcus Smart might opt for free agency, right? On and on. You've got a bunch of the guys that you're going to need to spend money on your own players. So how do you then improve the team without doing kind of a, one step back, maybe a step and a half forward type of situation? Like, I don't know, you turn Rui into an Andrew Wiggins or something. And I don't even know if that's a step forward for you. But you're losing a good player, you're bringing in a player that you might think is a better fit. That's not really the path towards true depth and making big leaps. Big leaps is we're going to keep our core pieces and add to that. But that may be a challenge for the Lakers. But it was good to hear him have confidence that we do have a path to make this work. We do have a path to keep our core together and add to this roster. I'm really curious, though, to see what that is. My worry is that that could actually mean staying above the cap and then being a mid-level exception team, and we can keep our pieces that way. And maybe we add a piece that's just all right with an MLE. I don't think that's really the path they're going to go down, but maybe it's an option that we're not discussing enough. But there's some offseason updates. We need to talk about the LeBron situation, the stuff that's come out about that. Let's get to that in just a moment. First, let's give a quick shout out to our sponsor, and that is Prize Picks. You guys can check them out. Use that code HMA, play $5, get $50 instantly over on Prize Picks. Super easy to use. Oops, took out Jovan there. Welcome back.
I'm back.
But I made a couple of picks here for tonight's game. Jovan, you can tell me what you think. I like Steph Castle more than 11.5 points and Anthony Edwards Agreed. More than 26.5 points.
Yeah, that's a good line for Ant. I think Castle, that's too low. But yeah, I think their season's on the line, so I could see Ant having like going out guns blazing. So
yeah, that's the only thing.
Yeah, that Fox 11. That's another one that. But obviously, I know we're looking at like those are some of the ones that lower payouts. So yeah, I would go Castle and Ant. I think that's good where your head's at.
Then, yeah, that's tomorrow's game. So time has no meaning right now. It's been so crazy this offseason. Tomorrow's games. Weird. There's actually no games tonight. I don't like that. All right. We do appreciate Prize Picks. Use that code HMA. Play $5. Get $50 instantly. Link is in the description down below. And if you guys are going to play, please do so responsibly. All right, Jovan, let's talk a little bit about, there's been a lot about LeBron. We saw the Dave McMenamin article. There have been a number of different things that have been made about LeBron, maybe not being super happy with how the Lakers have treated him over the last year. What are your thoughts on what's come out, and then what is that going to mean for this team heading into the summer and their efforts to potentially bring LeBron back for another season?
I'm not necessarily surprised. Like it feels like there's been a story like this, and I've even probably contributed to a couple of these stories over the last few years. So I'm not like, I think the best way to put it, in my opinion, is like, it's a complicated relationship, and both sides, I think, need each other to a degree, but both sides also have their things that they don't necessarily love about the other side or the other party. And I think it's just then like those things continue to trickle out and have been trickling out over the last few years. And from LeBron's perspective, I understand it to a degree, right? And I think if you look at the Lakers have certainly done things to whether it's been whatever type of contract he's wanted, or there's often been clutch guys on the roster, or drafting Bronny. There's been some real things that the Lakers have done in terms of appeasing LeBron and treating him the way that a superstar wants to be treated or should be treated by a premier franchise. At the same time, I think like undeniably the Lakers have not put out championship level rosters over the last several years, and have also not gone all in post Russ trade until you could argue the Luka trade. But I don't think the Luka trade was made with LeBron in mind. I think that was made with the future of the franchise in mind, and like, we need a younger lead star. So if you know, pre-Luka, like post Russ trade, pre-Luka trade, I think the Lakers did not maximize their rosters, did not get close to maximizing their rosters. And I am more on LeBron's side than the Lakers side in terms of like, I would probably feel a type of way of like, you guys did not, like, we won a championship together, and then you guys basically have dropped the ball every year since then in terms of putting a true championship level roster together. And is LeBron at fault to some degree with the Russ trade and just the impact that trade made? For sure. But at some point, I think with how much of a win now window the Lakers had, they had to try to get out of that, I think, a little bit sooner and go more all in, and they chose not to. And now they're in a pretty good spot. It worked out, I think, more for the franchise and for like the future with Luka. But if you're LeBron, I mean, I don't think it's worked really out for him since that trade in terms of the Russ trade. Now, from the Lakers side, I think they're in a tough spot where they're the one team that I think LeBron would have interest in that can actually negotiate with him and offer him more than either the minimum or the non-taxpayer MLE. So they actually have to put a calculation on how much do we value this guy, how much do we think he's worth, and then make sure that that's not a low enough number that like offends LeBron. And clearly that's been some of the stuff that's come out the last couple of days is I think Brian Windhorst of ESPN just reported that LeBron doesn't view himself as a $30 million player. So if you're going to come to LeBron and be like, we think you're worth $30 million, here's our contract offer, that's not going to go well with him. And he's not going to approve that. It's got to be more so, I think they got to court him here a little bit, and it's got to be, we think you're worth X, whatever that number is, but to build the best possible roster, we need to pay you Y. And with that money that we're saving, we're gonna keep Marcus, or we're gonna make a offer sheet to Walker Kessler or Peyton Watson or whatever that the Lakers are planning to do. So I get it from both sides, but it's complicated. I don't really know how else to put it, and it's been complicated for years. And I truly think the fracture point of a lot of the issues that they've had over the last few years has been the Rush trade. And I mean, I just think we've never quite seen a trade like this that not only like derailed the franchise's aspirations and assets, but has really led to all of this content fodder that's come out the last few years.
I mean, the Rush trade took a team that was set up to be a perennial contender for years to come and made them decisively not that. It was one of the most devastating trades we've seen in NBA history. So rebounding from that, certainly difficult. And I don't absolve LeBron from blame in that, but I also look at it, who ultimately has to execute the trade? The Lakers do. So I'm going to put most of the blame for that trade on the Lakers. Again, doesn't mean LeBron is blameless. If LeBron had said, there's no way it's ever working with Russ, do not do this, Lakers probably don't do it, right? But we've seen in the past where LeBron has wanted certain things and the Lakers have not given in to him. So if I'm going to try to dole out the blame there, I'm going to put more of it onto the Lakers themselves, who have to actually execute the trade. Regardless, did they need to recover faster from that? Yes. And if you're LeBron, you can look at it and say, you had me and AD for years. We weren't able to put together a team that was able to make consistent runs. Some of that's certainly injury related, but they weren't able to bounce back from the Rush trade quickly enough. So I understand if there's some feelings there. Now, when we get to today, and this is now a long relationship, it's 8 years with LeBron and the Lakers, but we get to today, and the Lakers, if you're going to pay LeBron, LeBron may say, you know what, I'm worth $50 million. And he may not be wrong about that, particularly when we factor in the financial side of things, like what he brings in terms of eyeballs and jersey sales and everything else, right? The this is a business part of it. It's a no-brainer to keep LeBron James. However, if you actually want to win basketball games, LeBron may be worth $50 million, but you can't pay him $50 million if you want to be able to add to this roster in any kind of a significant way. And the challenge is the other teams that are out there, best case scenario, when we're talking about Golden State, we're talking about Cleveland, maybe New York, some of these other clubs, the best case scenario for them is maybe if we jump through some hoops, we can get to $15 million, the mid-level exception that we can throw at LeBron James. And so for the Lakers, it's about, can you find a way to get LeBron to say, look, other clubs are offering you this. This is the most they can give you. We need flexibility. We're going to offer you more than that, but we still need you to take less. And the big key is going to be for what? For what? LeBron already made it clear. What was it, last year, year before, when he said, look, I'll take less if you can get me James Harden. I'll take less if you can get me Klay Thompson, right? You've got to be able to go to LeBron and say, hey, we need you to take less. It doesn't mean you're worth less. It doesn't mean this is what is fair. But in order to build out a roster that's going to allow you to compete, this is what we need you to do. And if you do this, then we can do this, this, and this. Not if you do this, we're going to have an extra $25 million to go spend, and we'll figure it out when we get there. You need to be able to show him a concrete plan. If I am LeBron, I would absolutely want that. I think that's entirely reasonable for him to say, if you're, I'm going to give up this money, I need to know where that money is going. And I need to know that it's going to something that is actually going to move the needle. So that's going to be the key for the Lakers as they go into these negotiations. What's going to be interesting is, what is that number? What does not offend LeBron? This is a very delicate thing. And at what point would LeBron say, like, what would the number be for LeBron to say, you know what, I'm offended enough to where I'm going to take tens of millions less to go play with Steph Curry or something like that? That, I think, is going to be an interesting dynamic here too in this whole LeBron situation. But Jovan, you're looking at the free agent pool. I think I could say that there is nobody out there in free agency right now that the Lakers can add that is better than LeBron James. So they still find themselves in a situation where the best path forward is, and I think this is for both sides, is staying together, LeBron and the Lakers. The key is doing it at a number that will also allow them to make additions to the roster.
Agreed. I mean, I've been thinking about this where I think we have more clarity on, we saw the second half of the season, the big three fit together and how that could look when they had some time together, they had some continuity and everybody was healthy and available. And then we saw at the end of the season that LeBron was clearly put into a role that he was, he was obviously overqualified for, just from like his historical context of just how great he is and his career accolades and accomplishments and whatnot. But like, still, that if you need LeBron to be a number one, he can do it. And we saw just the level he went to close the regular season, and then the level he went to in that Houston series. He's not going to be the number one because Luka is going to be the number one, but he can be the number two. And I think maybe moving forward, if they do keep that trio together, the new pecking order is, it goes back to more the 2024-25 mold of Luka number one, LeBron number two, Austin number three. And so if that's maybe the goal, and you're keeping, hey, LeBron, you're not going to go back to being the number one again, but we are going to pay you at a certain number and we won't put you back at the number three. You'll be the number two. That's cool. But I think the tricky thing for the Lakers, and this is where I people can argue whether, I know there's a lot of, the Lakers don't need LeBron, they need to move on. Okay. You're not, to your point, you're not finding a guy who's as good as this current version of LeBron in free agency or even in trade, right? If you think about the guys that are going to be like salary dumped by their teams, on the high side, you're maybe talking about a Isaiah Hartenstein, Lou Dort, Jalen Suggs. Like, you're not talking about, I don't think there's going to be any star that's necessarily salary dumped. And if they are, there's likely a reason they are salary dumped. Like, of course, at the core of it, it's an apron issue, it's a cap issue, but it's also on some level probably like a contract issue of, this isn't the best contract, this player isn't really performing at this level, and if you're the Lakers, you could take that risk on. But I just think if you remove LeBron from the situation, you're going into next season with Austin as your second best player, and then likely a decent gap to whoever is the third best player. And I just think your ceiling is lower. I think you want someone, ideally, in my opinion, that's better than Austin. And that slots Austin as more of that number three. And that is the pathway to the Lakers competing with OKC and San Antonio. If it's just basically Luka, Austin, and a bunch of role players, like, I know they had the nice start to the season, and I think they were 10-4 without LeBron before he returned. Like, that's great. And I know the Luka Austin net rating has been great, but I think we saw like that there are levels to this, and like the Lakers still need that top end talent to compete with the best teams in the league. So I just think it almost, if LeBron leaves, I think it almost turns next year into a gap year, unless the Lakers can find a really creative way to go out. Like, I mean, maybe that's what causes you to try and go get Giannis, and maybe you go that route at that point, but they're going to have to find a way to get more top end talent. Cause I don't think Luka plus Austin plus a bunch of role players is enough to truly compete with OKC and San Antonio.
I ultimately put it like this. You know, I think that the days of no brainer, LeBron James on your team means you are making deep playoff runs every single year, and it doesn't matter who you put around him that much because he's just that damn good and he will drag a whole team through to the finals if he has to. Those days are gone. There is a world where if you lost LeBron James, your team could improve with very specific piece. If you told me they could add a high motor big that can be a rim protector, lob threat, plus a really good 3-and-D wing, okay, there could be a path. A few years ago, you'd say, I don't care who it is you're adding. You remove LeBron James, your team is automatically worse. The problem is the path to actually getting those things that I'm talking about, where you could argue the Lakers are better without LeBron James, is perilous. Very, very difficult to try to make something like that happen. So most likely, your best path forward is going to be with LeBron James. Again, as long as you can actually build out the rest of your roster. And then on top of that, I do think that LeBron's best path forward is with the Lakers. So even if there is a little bit of, I don't know, if there's a little resentment or whatever it is that's been built up, ultimately, the two sides do need each other. Now, I think the one thing that's interesting is, I don't recall, I believe it was Dan Wojcicki's article that had, you know, Luka being promised that they're going to create a new version of the Dallas Mavericks style roster build that featured all these hyper athletic wings and bigs that could be lob threats and another guard that can help. And that would be Austin Reeves kind of in that slot. That kind of a roster, does that really suggest LeBron returning and building around him? And if you don't have him, can you even get to that level that you're talking about with that Dallas team that went all the way to the finals? That was the only thing that made me think, if it's really a let's copy the Dallas mold, where does LeBron fit into that? You know, can you take a talent downgrade from LeBron James towards a guy that you think may fit a little better? Is that actually going to be a true step forward for the club? So I think that's another thing that'll be interesting is to see what exactly is the vision for what this team is going to look like. Clearly, Luka is the focal point, and everything is going to be done through the lens of what works with Luka. But if the goal is let's build a Dallas-style club, the way that finals team was set up, what does that mean ultimately for LeBron James and his role? And what does that mean for selling LeBron to come back? Because it would be a big talent downgrade to lose him. So there's some big fork in the road decisions for them to make here.
The only thing, though, as we talk through this, and I think the league is constantly evolving year to year in terms of what, like, you see there will be, like, for example, last year with Indiana, a lot of the pressing and the tempo stuff, the pace stuff that they had, you saw teams start to implement that more this year, right? And we saw a slight increase in pressing and just teams, yeah, you know, playing a little bit smaller at times. I think we're in this weird spot now where I don't think the traditional big three model works in terms of, or
agreed,
it has its limitations. Like, you have to nail the rest of the roster, obviously, but mm-hmm, if you're paying like three guys $60 million each, $50 million each, it especially with the first and second apron, it does get really difficult to build out a proper starting group or proper eight-man rotation, etc. But we're looking at two situations here in OKC and San Antonio where they each could have four all-star level players that are, at least for the time being, you know, well, some of those guys are on their rookie scale contracts, like, aren't being paid close to max level money. So OKC, I mean, we saw what AJ Mitchell just did. You could argue AJ Mitchell was the second best player in the series, like second or third, depending on how you want to do, sure, the pecking order. That's a dude who's making $3 million the next 3 years. Chet, you know, the extension is going to kick in. J-Dub, the extension is going to kick in. Shea also has a bigger extension kicking in. So that's where OKC is eventually going to have to make some choices. But I think they're going to prioritize keeping those guys, or maybe they end up flipping J-Dub or something. But I think for the most part, they're going to keep the top end talent on their roster. Then you have San Antonio, who's got three dudes on rookie scale contracts in Wemby, Stephon Castle, and Dylan Harper, and then another all-star level guy, you know, made the all-star team this year in De'Aaron Fox. So it's like those teams are sort of doing the star mold also while being young and athletic, also while having depth. And part of the reason why they're able to do that is because they've had these top five, top 10 picks that have really hit and are producing at a really high level. And with OKC, I think they're closer to their fully formed version. San Antonio, like, Wemby's going to get better. Castle's going to get better. Harper's going to get better. Like, how they're going to look next year and the year after is crazy. So I say all this to say that even comparing, I think the Lakers have to approach things slightly differently than even the 2024 Dallas mold, because I think the top of the West is much better Like, I think you drop in 2026 OKC or 2026 San Antonio, and they're much better than the top of the West in, sure, in 2024. So, like, the West is evolving, and OKC and San Antonio kind of have everything in terms of young stars, depth. They can kind of play any style. And, like, the Lakers, I think you need, like, an elevated version of the 2024 Mavericks. I don't think you could just be like, let's go get the exact same players or exact same player archetypes. I think you need a way to have that at least third star, but ideally on, like, a team-friendly contract, and how you figure that out, whether that's LeBron potentially at, you know, a discount, or Austin with a bit of a hometown discount. Like, they need to find a way to kind of get closer to that build, because to me, OKC and San Antonio are just at a much higher level than anything we saw in 2024.
I think you're spot on with that. And we look at what it's going to take for the Lakers, the reality is you're going to have to, because the Lakers don't have a lot of draft capital. They don't have a lot of guys on rookie contracts. That's where, when Rob Blink is talking about, you know, we just don't tank, we don't build that way, I love that. There's a feel good element of that, like a bravado. Yeah, tanking, that's for other teams. We don't do that with the Lakers, right? We don't do those things. What you need, guys that are providing more bang for their buck. Like, basically everybody on your roster under this collective bargaining agreement, everybody has to pull their weight at their pay grade minimum. You probably need at least a handful of guys that are punching above their weight, right? That are able to give you more than what they're actually being paid to do. And then we can look at the last few years and we can say, well, Austin Reeves was doing that. Why didn't that set the Lakers forward? Because they had guys like Jared Vanderbilt and even like Maxi Kleber this season, right? That were Gabe Vincent for a while, that were stacked up on this roster, that were eating into any of that benefit of having a guy who was producing way above his pay grade. So you've got to find a way to hit on some of these players. And that, again, brings us all the way back to, you know, player development. And can you find guys on cheap contracts that are going to give you that kind of depth that you need without having to pay a fortune in order to get them? And that is the modern NBA. It's why there's a life cycle of a team. It's why eventually Oklahoma City is going to get too expensive. Now, AJ Mitchell extends their lifespan that much more because he's only making $3 million. But ultimately, as players get more and more expensive, teams have to make difficult choices. They're going to have to shed some players. Does that team then drop down? The teams that have young players on these cheap contracts, they're going to be able to rise up once those players get more expensive. They drop off and start falling back down as they have to make difficult choices, and on you go. But the key is, you have to be able to, in order to fully rise up in this league, you have to be able to find players that are on those cheap contracts and that can give you a lot more than what you're paying them to give. And that's tough for a team that is not projected to have any high value draft picks anytime soon. You're going to have to hit on a Due Thero is going to have to make a leap, right? Stuff like that. You're somebody you can find in the second round. Not that they've got much second round draft capital either. I think they're going to have, when the calendar flips, they get one second round pick available, but they've got to find a way to identify young talent, bring them in, coach them up, and then have guys that can produce above what they're talking about if you're going to compete with some of these teams that have been just force-fed pick after pick after pick after pick. And they've done a nice job hitting on those picks, but they've got all these guys on the cheap, which makes it very difficult to keep up with them. All right, we've got plenty of super chats here that we're going to get into. We probably won't get through all of them, but we're going to get into that in just a moment. Quick shout out to our sponsor, and then we'll be right back.
So the NBA playoffs are obviously a grind, but I can see the light at the end of the tunnel finally. Now that my wife and I live in Colorado, we're by Red Rocks, and so I'm excited to go see some concerts this year. I'm actually very excited to go see the Tedeschi Trucks Band. They're coming to play a two-night set at the end of July, July 31st. I think Derek Trucks is one of the best guitarists in the history of the world. So very, very excited to get out, which is why I want to give the sponsor of today's video, SeatGeek, a huge shout out. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. And it's really just about how simple the process is. It's so easy to open up the app, look at your map of all the seats, but you can sort by deal, which is my favorite feature, and they rate every single ticket on a scale of 1 to 10 by how good the deal is. So I know if I'm picking from these ones at the top, I'm getting an amazing deal. And as I work further down the list, obviously it might not be as good of a deal, which kind of just simplifies the process for me and helps me know that I'm getting the right ticket for the right price. There are more than 70,000 events listed on SeatGeek, including concerts, sports, festivals, and more. And you can now get World Cup tickets on SeatGeek. And by the way, every ticket is backed by their buyer guarantee. And of course, I have a code for you guys. You can use code COLLECTIVE10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with promo code COLLECTIVE10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you, SeatGeek.
There you go. Jason makes an appearance on the show. All right, let's get into some of our chat questions and comments here. Kevin says, if we get Peyton Watson, would you rather keep Rui or Kennard? Personally, what Rui has done versus OKC is great, but what about Kennard against the Rockets? He's saying keep Kennard. I during the playoffs, I leaned further and further on the Rui side of things. There was a period where I flipped more towards Kennard, but I'm pretty firmly in the Rui camp right now. Jovo, where are you at in terms of specifically in a roster situation where somehow the Lakers convinced the Denver Nuggets to relinquish Peyton Watson?
I'm with you. You know, maybe there's a price point where if Rui is getting, $20+ million interest from other teams, and which it would have to be a cap space team, or maybe a sign and trade situation. Yeah. If he's getting like that market, and people have cooled on Luke, because really when we talk about the Rocket series, it was two games. It was games one and games two. Luke was never the same player. I mean, I forget if it was game two or game three of the OKC series. He did have 15, hit a few threes. So I think he had like three and a half good games, but I thought we saw some of the limitations with Luke, both in terms of the defensive end with Houston really targeting him and having a lot of success, OKC targeting him and having success, but also just his lack of confidence in shooting and just turning down a bunch of good looks. And it's like, even if you are going to be targeted or a defensive liability, at least make up for it on the offensive side and hit a bunch of threes and play with a certain level of confidence and aggression. And we saw it in the regular season. It felt like he turned the page late in the season after Luka and AR went out with the way he closed the regular season on the first couple games of the Houston series. Like, he had a heater there of 6-7 games. But then from that point on, he kind of went back to being the player he was of, I'm going to be overly selective with my shot selection and just sort of be more of like a system player rather than a guy that's standing out. And between that, like, I just think like also if we're looking at like their general profiles, like Rui's 6'8", he's taller, he's stronger, he's more athletic, he's better defensively, and I think he's more of a playoff riser than Luke is. And sure, Rui's had some big games and big performances for the Lakers. So, he fits more into like a small ball look if you want to go small. I do think the one thing with Rui is that if you are running it back with LeBron, Luka, and Austin, I think he's a bench player in that instance. I don't think he's the other starter. So you do have a limitation of like, you either need to have Marcus in that role or you need to go find someone to be in that starting role. And then that maybe puts a cap on like Rui's value in that particular build. But if you lose LeBron, then like he can slot in as a starter. You still need to find that more defensive guy at that point, because you need a certain level of defense if you're starting Rui. But yeah, I mean, I think between the two, I would heavily lean Rui. I think Luke to me is more of like an eighth man maybe on a really good team, and you also need a certain amount of athleticism. Like, I don't think he fits with the Lakers' current defensive scheme. I think they'd have to change their defensive scheme to protect him a little bit more moving forward. So yeah, I'm way more on the Rui side.
He fits in terms of it being a player that, like we were talking about earlier, that can dribble, pass, and shoot. That's what Kennard really, really like. And that's the true differentiator between, because Rui's got a deadly pull-up 15-footer. Kennard has a deadly 15-footer. Both guys can shoot the three. Kennard a bit more crafty at the rim, certainly, than Rui is. But the big differentiator is Kennard, when he's attacking a closeout, he's on another level when it comes to making the read in terms of the pass. If it's not a dribble pull up, if it is I got to find the right read and make a pass out to maintain the advantage, Kennard's much more well suited to that scenario. But otherwise, mm-hmm. I think in every area, I'd rather have Rui Hachimura across the floor. Now, what I'm really hoping to see, this is the way I hope that Rui's free agency plays out from a Lakers perspective. I think a lot about Naz Reid a few years ago with the Wolves, where the Wolves we're going very similar situation where the Wolves could extend Naz Reid all the way up until June 30th. That's where the Lakers are at with Rui right now. They can offer him an extension all the way up till June 30th. They could do it right now if they wanted to. They could extend Rui Hachimura this second. They have all the way until the 30th to do it. What the Wolves did with Naz Reid is they said, Naz, look, you've been here for a few years. This has worked out great. We know you're going to have a bunch of mid-level exception offers out there. We'll tell you what. We're going to give you, as I recall, it was like $1 million. We're going to give you $1 million more than the mid-level. And in exchange for that, we're going to ask you not to, don't even entertain these other teams. Don't even get to free agency. Take our extension right now. And that's exactly what Naz Reid did. He said, cool, I want to rock with you guys. I'm going to continue here. It has been a great experience. You're going to give me a little bit more than what everybody else, we know mid-level is what everybody else is offering. You're going to give me a little bit more. I'm comfortable with that. Let's go. And he never even touched free agency. I'm not saying specifically the Lakers need to offer 1 million more than mid-level or whatever it was, but can you give him, assuming like the Spurs would be more than happy to give Rui Hachimura their mid-level exception, assuming they'll have access to that, can the Lakers come along and give Rui a little bit more in exchange for him not even testing free agency, just getting an extension done and then moving on from there? That is an advantage that the Lakers have with Rui compared to teams that are going to have to wait. At least by rules, they'll have to wait until the clock strikes, whatever it is. I think it's 3 Eastern time or something on June 30th. The Lakers can go ahead and negotiate something that like that with Rui ahead of time. So that is the way I am hoping Rui Hachimura's free agency plays out.
I agree. No notes.
Let's go here. Thoughts on pursuing Io Desunmu in free agency, 50, 40, 90. I think he'd be a great fit, whether it's playing alongside Luka in a 3-guard lineup with Luka, Austin, and Io. I think his defensive abilities would be very useful. I question though what the Wolves are going to, given what they gave up to get him. What was it, 3-4 second round picks? I think it was that they gave up to get Io Desunmu. I would imagine they gave that up intending to keep him, and have probably already had conversations of what it's going to cost to hang on to him, but. You know, but I love the idea of Io Desunmu as a fit. I can question whether or not there are some squeakier wheels in terms of what the Lakers roster needs, but Io Desunmu, I think that's where a lot of boxes in the backcourt.
I think it's a matter of, to me, if we're taking what the Lakers are saying at face value and they want to build around Luka and Austin, Io can fit into that build, but I think the two biggest needs, and these have been the Lakers' two biggest needs going on quite a while. They need a better starting center, and they need a true two-way wing in that 6'7" to 6'9" range. That a guy who can be, again, not necessarily, ideally 50th percentile, above 50th percentile on both sides, but like as close to that as possible, like a true two-way contributor. Yeah. And really an upgrade like over Marcus. Like I think, you know, keeping Marcus but moving him into a slightly smaller role off of the bench that keeps him fresher and allows him to withstand the grind of an 82 game season and going into the playoffs. But so like Io doesn't really check either of those two boxes. Now I think there is a point in free agency where, okay, you pursue Walker Kessler, Jalen Duren, you strike out because those guys are restricted free agents. You pursue Peyton Watson, Tari Eason, whoever, and you strike out because those guys are restricted free agents, and you scour the market and it's like, well, OKC is not going to trade with you because they don't want to send one of their starters to another competitor in the conference. And you just look around and like, there aren't many great options for you in terms of starting level guys that check the boxes that you need. Then I think from a pure talent perspective, I would go with Io. And like at some point, when you like, I think there's the sweet spot of like need and talent, but once you can't find that player, then you have to just go with like, who's the best player available? Who's actually just going to provide a certain amount of talent and production and add skill to our group? Io would 100% check that box. So I would still want to do my due diligence in terms of scouring the market for LA's specific positional needs. And if you can't find a player that quite checks the box at a level as high or higher than Io, then I think at that point it's like, all right, well, we just need more talent and better players. let's go get Io. Now you have to make that calculation like before free agency, basically. And that's right. Why the Lakers have to do their intel gathering and kind of reading the tea leaves of who's going to be potentially available. Who's there? I'm not gonna say, I know what I'm doing. They got an intel gather to figure out who's available and who's not, and then go from there. But I would certainly be open to adding him. I just like, even if you think he's a better player than Peyton Watson, which I don't think, but even if you wanted to make, like, you could make that case, he had a 43-point playoff game. It's just Peyton Watson is a 6'9" athlete who can contribute on both sides of the ball. That player and positional archetype is far more valuable to the Lakers right now than Io.
Agreed. It looks like we did get a few that came in before the show started. Julian Rojas said, would a signing and trading Austin Reeves affect the cap space cap hold? Yes. Yeah, it would. I mean, it depends on what's coming back. If you were to just sign it, let's say in theory, you just signed and traded Austin Reeves into someone else's cap space and they sent back a pick, right? Like you send him to, I don't know, let's say the Brooklyn Nets and they send back a draft pick and that's all that comes back. Okay, well then Austin's cap hold of 20, 21 million would come off of your book. You would have that much more in spending power at that point if you were to do that. But again, that would have to be a sign and trade. He'd have to agree to go to whatever team you're talking about signing and trading him to. And then obviously if you're going to bring back contracts, then those salaries are going to count against your books as well. PRJKT said, got nostalgic watching our March highlights. That was a good month. Great season, guys. Thanks for all the content on the show, as well as Buho's Block, Basketball Bulletin, everywhere, LN, all over the place.
I think it was Hoops Tonight, too.
Hoops Tonight. Yeah. Excited for free agency all over the place. Yeah, I'm excited for free agency here. This is going to be... like I said, I think the Lakers are, and again, I'm biased, but I think the Lakers are one of the most fascinating teams to look at for this summer, just because they've got,
I think they are. That's not even from like, just objectively, they have the most cap space of any good team. They have all these questions with LeBron and Austin and it's going to be a huge summer for the Lakers.
Let's go here. LA shouldn't pay $50 million to LeBron. Don't need to listen to clowns like Windhorse and Dave. Oh, come on. Would love to have him on a $20 million deal and Austin Reeves on a $30 million deal. Not a penny more. I think ultimately it comes down to, you know, if push comes to shove, if it's, hey, you're going to get LeBron, you're going to offer him $20 million. That's not enough more than Golden State at 15, let's say. And that's enough to where he's going to say, I'm offended enough to leave $5 million bucks on the table. Screw it, I'm out, right? Are you okay with that? Are you okay with losing with that? Those may be ideal numbers, but how realistic is it if the pain point becomes, well, you're going to lose the player if you do that? So I agree. I would love to see both guys on contracts. Hell, I'd love to see both guys say, screw it, we love the team so much, we're going to play for veteran minimums. That would be lovely for the Lakers moving forward in terms of their ability to build out the roster. But I think it's going to be a very delicate dance with both players figuring out what number is ultimately going to work and then what they're going to be able to do with whatever that number comes in at.
Only thing I would add is I think those are both great numbers for the Lakers. Yeah. I think both of these guys will want more than these respective numbers. But I would also just say that, like, I think that's the floor. I would be, at least in, like, with LeBron, obviously, if he goes to a different situation, it would probably be less. But I think if LeBron is staying in LA and if Austin is staying in LA, I think these are great outcomes for the Lakers. But also, I would put this as the floor for each of these guys. Yeah. I would be shocked if either of them accepted a penny lower than either of these two numbers.
Mamadou said, thoughts on Rob Williams from Portland. Also, we need to find some diamonds in the rust for cheap. Diamonds in the rust. It's an interesting way to phrase it. Anyway, Rob Williams from Portland. I'm worried about the injury history, obviously, as just about everybody would be. Yovan, if you got Rob Williams, you're looking at him as a backup option, right? Like you would still feel like you needed a starting five.
So I can think of theoretical paths where he could be a starter and maybe it would not be ideal, to be clear. I'm just stating like maybe DA opts in, the Lakers retain Jackson, and you decide, hey, we're going to go with like a three-headed monster at center of, I mean, I think Robert, it feels weird calling him, I'll call him Time Lord, could, I mean, if it's between him and DA, I think he's a better lob threat and a better defender than DA. And now you got to keep him in bubble wrap. I've been making that point with him and Mitchell Robinson. Like those are two guys that regardless of if they're starting or coming off the bench, I think you have to limit their minutes to like low 20s. But I could see like if you're spending, if you're getting like Peyton Watson, for example, or you're investing, you know, you're trading for Lu Dort, signing Lu Dort, whatever, you're investing your primary addition at the wing spot, I could see them going a slightly cheaper route at the center spot and maybe it being more by committee, but it would have to be that. It would not, I mean, if you're not adding the big wing who's making a certain amount of money, then I would hope that he's only a backup. But whether he's a starter in like a three-headed center rotation or he's a backup, I'm open to him, you know, for the right price. Like I would not really want to pay him more than, I mean, ideally the minimum, maybe he goes for more than that. I mean, like from a production and skill set standpoint, he's definitely better than a minimum player. It's just with the health and like, you just have no reliability there. Right. And no assurance that he can stay healthy for a full season. So maybe he's somewhere I think he's clearly better than Jackson, for example. Like, I don't think that is close. Sure. So between those two guys, I'd rather have Robert Williams. But depending on the contract, I'd be open to it. And depending on the context of the roster, it's just difficult to say right now with like a blanket statement.
If you told me you had Rob Williams, you had DA and Hayes, okay, there you've got enough depth there, insulation there in case of an injury that you could slot him in as your starter and say of the three, I do think he has the highest upside in terms of a night in, night out performance. He's absolutely incredible. The problem is he just can't stay on the floor. But yeah, if you could get him on a veteran minimum or something like that, yeah, I wouldn't have an issue as long as you said, those resources are going elsewhere, specifically to the wing position. Appreciate y'all a lot. Jovan doing super late night streams. Trev uploading and streaming on every channel of his consecutively. Hats off to y'all. Well, thank you. We appreciate you being here. And thank you for subscribing to the channel. Everybody, if you're not a subscriber yet, please make sure you do hit the subscribe button and follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts as well. But truly, thank you for the kind words.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And might be going live tonight to do the Drake album, Iceman.
Well, there you go.
So some non-basketball content. Although he's been firing some shots at LeBron, so it's kind of basketball content.
I saw that. I would rather have Io and Kobe if Austin Reeves demands max. You're talking about Kobe Bufkin?
Yeah, who's Kobe W?
Kobe
White? I think it's probably Kobe White.
It's spelled differently.
Yeah, it's probably Kobe White. I own Kobe White. I mean, I would say, I think actually now you can still have this opinion, but I would say I own Kobe White would actually cost more than Austin on a per year basis. I would assume.
If you combine, sure.
If you combine them, yes. Because I think Io's at least going to get 20. And maybe that number goes into like the low to mid 20s. And Kobe White to me is around at least non-taxpayer MLE range. So, I mean, I think you could have those guys collectively making like 35 to 40 million, which puts you right in the Austin range. I mean, you could still prefer those guys. I'm just stating that like if the thought process was saving money, that's not necessarily the case.
Let's let Rui go. Kennard for cheaper, Kevin says. Get Watson, trade Ayton and two picks for Kessler. Bring back Smart, use Reeves cap hold and get one more available 3-and-D. I think that's a lot more than you'd actually logistically be able to pull off in terms of the room you would have. Get Watson, you know, what's it going to cost just to get Peyton Watson? As far as trading Ayton and two picks for Walker Kessler would have to put a lot of pressure on the Jazz to say, hey, I don't want to be here. I want to sign with the Lakers. Let's do a sign and trade here and get me out. I think the Jazz have been pretty steadfast and they want to hang on to him. They want to keep him. So, I mean, it sounds great. Get Walker Kessler, get Peyton Watson. We already talked about the Rui versus Kennard thing. We went into that earlier. But I think actually, Jovan, I hate like pouring cold water on all, because we want to be excited about what's coming up in the offseason. But I do find there's a lot of people say, oh, well, just get this guy, this guy, this guy. And then I come in and I'm the wet blanket saying, well, this can never happen. This can never happen. This can't happen.
How could you, Trevor?
I know, right? But I don't want to crush hopes and dreams.
So let's talk through this for a second. So yeah. I think with the number 25 pick, they're projected around, I think, $48 million in mm-hmm. cap space. But they could obviously, you know, they could waive or decline the team option on Nick Smith Jr. That opens up a couple extra million. You could waive Bronny if you really want to. He's guaranteed 1.2, so that could clear up an extra million or whatever. Million. But then with cap holds, it might offset. But let's just say hypothetically, like they're. I don't think Nick Smith Jr. really makes sense with this group moving forward. So for argument's sake, we'll say $50 million to keep it a nice round number. If you use the room exception with Kennard, that does not take away from the cap space. So Kennard mm-hmm. is back on the team. He is to the side here. Between Watson and Kessler, I think you're going to need at least $60 million, if not potentially a little bit more, $60 to $65 million combined. 60 is probably on the low end, but we'll see. Let's just say you could get them for 60. Maybe Watson's 27, 28, Kessler's 32, 33, yeah. That combined is 60. I mean, that 50 plus Ayton only gets you to $58 million. So you would need to shed some additional salary in the form of either Vando or Jake or Dalton. Mm-hmm. Bringing back Marcus, though, you would have had to rescind the rights to Marcus at that point to get enough flexibility to sign Watson and then also sign and trade with Kessler. You're also going to be hard capped at the first apron for what that's worth with the sign in trade for Kessler. Yeah, you wouldn't be able to bring back Marcus, and you could sign a 3-and-D guy for the minimum, but you're not adding like a, so point being, like, there is a pathway for them to get Watson and Kessler. It's unlikely because of their cost and because they're both RFAs. But yeah, if you did do that, you'd have to find another way to shed some more money, and you wouldn't be able to keep Marcus. So that's where it's difficult. If the Lakers are keeping, if the goal is like we want to keep LeBron, Marcus, and Rui, it gets really difficult to add another substantial player to that unless one or a couple of those guys takes like massive discounts that we just don't really see. Like I think it just gets really tough. So that's where you might have to lose one of those guys to fit. So in this case, you would have to lose Marcus.
Now that's the other piece to this though too, right? When we're talking about that, In all those calculations, LeBron is not in there either. So you're moving on from LeBron. Let's say you've got the ability to, let's say somehow you can stack up Ayton, Vando, you get teams that are going to take them, you're able to send out enough salary, and effectively you're losing LeBron, DA, Smart, Vando.
Glad you mentioned LeBron. I didn't mention like LeBron is out in this scenario too. So you're losing LeBron and Smart.
And you're adding Peyton Watson and Walker Kessler. Is that a step forward?
I don't think so. Like it is in some regards, right? I think you're better defensively. I think you're more athletic. You're a little bit longer. But again, as I mentioned earlier in the show, like losing LeBron, you're losing, I would say, the guy in totality who is like the second best player on the team this season, right? If you're weighing the playoffs more, I would say the second best player on the team. Like if you just I think there is a big gap between LeBron and Peyton Watson or LeBron and Walker Kessler like right now. So I do like spots. I like the like non-stars better. Like maybe Peyton Watson pops and we're looking at Peyton Watson like an all-star next year, and that's a different conversation. But assuming that Watson and Kessler are like maybe just 5% better than what they were, 5 to 8%, whatever, better than they were last year. And with Kessler, it was a small set, but like Kessler 2 years ago, it's just, it's like a more, I think it's a more appropriate roster for like the future, but now you're going to have to find that other like high level player through the draft or trade or free agency or whatever, like to fit. Cause I think again, if your top four is Luka, Austin, Watson, Kessler, I just don't think that's comparable to the top four of OKC or San Antonio.
And I think that you also have to remember in that scenario where you're signing and trading for these guys, you're going to have to include draft capital, especially if Jared Vanderbilt is going out. So now you're talking about draft picks as well going out in order to compensate, in this case, Utah and Denver for those players. And let's also remember that Utah and Denver are teams that would, if they are going to sign and trade, if Denver especially is going to sign and trade Peyton Watson, they would prefer to send him almost anywhere else, save maybe Minnesota, rather than send him to the Lakers. So it's a difficult...
I don't always buy into the Lakers tax. I think sometimes that stuff is a little overblown. Like I buy in it to a degree, but I think sometimes it is overblown or kind of used as an excuse. That said, I don't think anyone is going to be bending over backwards to help the Lakers out this summer. Like I think the Lakers, if you could send a player to the Lakers or you could send a player to another situation, as long as the offers are like relatively comparable, I think people are going to be preferring the other option. I just think that's we only see this backlash and like freak out with like the Powell trade and the Luka trade, and like people just crash out when teams help the Lakers out. And I think there is a little bit of a stigma out there of like, you don't want to be the team that is helping the Lakers out right now. So I think that they're going to have to get really creative and aggressive in how they execute some of these deals.
Yeah. Again, they're going to be the team to watch this summer. All right, let's check this out. James Bell said, how do y'all feel about the Lakers trading for Giannis to play the five to help extend his career with Luka? We talked about it last
year. Does Giannis want to play the five, or is this right, AD 2.0?
That's a big question. Does Giannis want to do that? Or is that another AD situation all over again? But I struggle with the logistics of how you ultimately build out a roster if you go trade for Giannis. And I don't even know if the Lakers would have the best trade package for him. I would assume they probably would not. But even if you could find a path to trading for him, are you going to have the depth, youth, athleticism that certainly Giannis is athletic, but are you going to have the depth, the youth, athleticism that Rob Pelinka has cited as the things that they're looking for? It would be difficult to say no to Giannis, but I just don't know that it really makes sense in the context of today's NBA. 20 years ago, put Luka and Giannis together and whatever you can cobble together for the pieces around them and let's go, right? But we're not living in that world anymore.
No, it's going to cost you LeBron. I don't think it has to cost you Austin. And there's the reporting from The Athletic that if the Lakers are trading for a star, Luka would prefer Austin to not be in the package and he'd prefer that they keep him. But if you just look at the financial situation of Luka, Giannis, and what Austin is likely going to make, you're just in a tough spot with the rest of the roster. I mean, that's all the cap space there, right? So it's not only like you're losing LeBron, but you're probably losing Marcus and Rui as well. Maybe Marcus really wants to stay and play at a discount because they're adding Giannis and he liked being in LA. And maybe Marcus takes like the room exception, but you're only getting one of the guys for the room exception, right? And so now we're talking about a situation where they and like all of their picks would have to go to Milwaukee. So it also makes it tougher to dump, because it'd be great in theory, like, oh, well, if you're getting Giannis, like just go dump Vando. And like, that's when you're okay with using the draft capital to dump them. But like, you're going to need those picks. I think there is a big difference between having two picks versus three picks, despite it not sounding like much of a difference. I think you would need three picks at a minimum to acquire Giannis. So that's where it's like, now all of a sudden your roster is Luka, Giannis, Austin, which sounds great. But then now you're talking about like maybe Marcus in like a best case scenario. Vando, Jake, D.A., Jackson, Adu, Bronny, Dalton. Like it just, I don't know. It's maybe a higher ceiling roster than like the current version, but you're still dealing with the depth issues and like you're one injury to one of the stars away from that really tilting in like a troubling way.
Let me ask you this. Knowing the Lakers' DNA, let's say Milwaukee comes to the Lakers and says, there is a package we will take that would get you Giannis. And Austin's not involved and Luka's not involved. Despite all the difficulties we're talking about, could you see the Lakers realistically saying no?
I could see them saying no, but I think the way their DNA is wired, they would say yes.
Yeah. I think they'd have a hard time turning down the opportunity. Commenton said, as a LeBron fan, I think it's best that the Lakers use up all their cap space on two-way players first, leaving only a veteran minimum for LeBron to decide if he wants to stay or not. So the idea is to build a roster that is so shiny and enticing that LeBron James would have no choice but to say, I will play for that team. Yes, I will play for the minimum. The challenge is, I don't think there's those guys out there in free agency to use up that cap space on. So now you're talking about trades. And I don't know. I can't see LeBron taking a veteran minimum, period, even if the roster does look sparkling.
I think he would walk in this instance.
Yeah.
Unless you got him to, like, unless you presented the plan. Like, again, yeah. I keep coming back to, I think you're going to have to court LeBron. You're going to have to pull out the red carpet, the purple and gold carpet, and sell him on this notion of, we want you back at this price and we're going to do X, Y, Z. Yeah. And that's what's going to make the most sense. And I don't think just saying like running it back is going to be enough. So we'll have to be bringing in, whether it's via trade or free agency, some real additions to the roster. And we'll see. I'm still on the side of him likely coming back, but there has been a lot of noise the last couple of days that it does make you wonder, where is some of this push coming from?
Yeah. Rather overpay Watson or we had this conversation last show, and I think we were on the Peyton Watson side in general. If you had to pick between the two, if the word is overpay, I think I would still, if I'm going to overpay, I want there to be a chance that contract is going to ultimately not look like an overpay. And I think between the two, there's a greater chance that Peyton Watson pops and becomes that next level guy than Walker Kessler.
Agreed. I also think Kessler overpay. I think Kessler is going to make more than Watson. So I think we're also talking about maybe Kessler, you feel, is like his true value is like 28 to 30 million, but now you have to overpay to 35, 36 million to really get Utah to back off. With Watson, it might be based on at least like him only having one real like productive year, and he was injured for a chunk of the year. Maybe you deem his value as like low to mid 20s, but now you have to overpay to like high 20s to even like 30-ish range. Mm-hmm. I just think that difference in the millions ultimately matters. And it is really difficult to find two-way front court players, like non-center two-way front court players. So that's where I would lean Watson.
All right, we're going to do a few more, and then we're getting into a time crunch. Francis Laker said, is Jake a project player for us? Hope we would still have Phil Handy to help him develop, as well as a do. Do you see Bronny playing 15 to 20 minutes next season? All right, so I guess let's start with the Jake LaRavia piece of it. I've already expressed my opinion on Jake that I was out on playing him in the playoffs. I thought JJ, you could even argue, waited too long to remove him from the rotation. But if he rediscovers his shot this summer, at least in terms of what he brings as a switchy wing, hustle, gritty player, that type of thing, he could still be a player for the Lakers next season at $6 million. So I'm not out on Jake. He's got to work on some stuff this summer, though. That's ultimately where I land with him.
Agreed. I think I've come back around a little bit more on Jake, where I mean, clearly he should not have been in the rotation. I think that was the right call by JJ, and I think we were all advocating for that early in the OKC series. But he did have the flashes last year. Like, I think people when they talk about Jake, forget some of the highs that he had last year. And there was also a reliability element with him where he was the only Laker to play in all 82 games. And he was an Iron Man on this team. And he did help the group defensively. Like, his offense came and went, and it often went. And that's an area that he needs to, like, he needs to lock himself in the gym and just work on catch and shoot threes all season and catching and finishing on the move. But I still see like a little bit of upside there. But yeah, I mean, so I would understand if they moved on from him, but I would also understand if they decided to keep him. I guess that's where I'm at. Agreed with Phil Handy and Adu. Bronny, I do not see playing 15 to 20 minutes next season. I mean, certainly possible, but I think the way, if we're talking about like building depth in the roster, that would probably slot, unless Bronny has like a significant jump in development this summer, which I'm not going to rule out, but I think he would have to develop significantly over the next few months to, if the Lakers achieve their goal of having a deeper roster, that would probably put Bronny, if he was like the ninth man by the end of the season with who was available, that would slot him probably more as like the 11th man if LA is like properly building their roster. So I think now, but I think he'll be in a far better position to like play more minutes if the Lakers have injuries, and like you'd have more confidence in him in that scenario, if that makes sense. But I don't think the Lakers are going to be going into next season penciling him in as a 15-minute a night guy.
Agreed. And I give him credit for the growth that he's shown so far, but I wouldn't be going into the season assuming that's what he's going to be for the season. JJ got heat for benching Rui at the end, but I think they needed Maxey and a movement shooter, which Rui isn't, to execute that ATO, and they executed it well. Just Austin missed the shot. Thoughts? I still would have preferred something drawn up for Rui. I would trust Rui taking the shot over the other guys personally, but I get the idea. And as we said earlier, if your thought is we may be put in because OKC is a team that's so good, we're going to be put in a scramble situation where you have to improvise. I'm going to trust the ball in Austin and LeBron's hands more anyway. I get it. I don't know. Jovan, I still prefer Rui being out there on the floor. And ideally, I'd prefer Rui even being the one taking the shot.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this earlier in the show, so I don't want to reiterate everything I said, but I think he's making a great point here. I just also think it's not a binary decision between Rui or Luke. Like, Luke is the better movement shooter between he and Rui, and you could even argue like Austin's quickness maybe, and I think we kind of saw that on that play, like Austin is quicker than Rui, so maybe in terms of who could get open easier and at least create an open or semi-open look, like, sure, I think Austin's better at that than Rui is, but Rui had literal flames coming out of his body during that fourth quarter, and it's just, I think it for me, it should have been Rui, Luke, and then if you Maxey really is the best screener, which you could argue he is, Maxey, then you figure out the other two guys. But you had two guys shooting 50% on threes, you know, regular season and playoffs combined. I think those two guys, who are clearly top 10 shooters in the league, should be on the floor. And so we don't need to continue to rehash it, but I think it should have been Rui, Luke, and Maxey, and then pick your inbounder and pick the fourth guy.
Right, last thing I want to get into here, Ryan says, Dave said Hayes is a top priority outside of Austin Reeves. You know, obviously he is now a Slovenian. Jackson Hayes will be playing with Luka.
Same agent.
Same agent. They have a mind meld in terms of their lob threat chemistry. I think those are important things. But I also, I tend to look at the Lakers' own free agents and slot them into two different buckets. There are the guys whose cap holds you're not going to use, assuming you're a below the cap team, and that's LeBron, that's Rui, right? There's the guys whose cap holds you are going to use. You're going to use their cap hold sitting on the books to go spend your free agent money and then go over the cap using their cap holds. And so that would be Austin. And then Jackson Hayes as well is a guy we maybe don't talk about enough because cap hold's only $4.5 million. And he could wind up getting a bit more than that. I'm not saying you go give him $20 million a year or whatever, but using Hayes cap hold, keep that on your books, go spend what you're going to spend, similar idea to what you're going to do with Austin Reaves, where you're going to use the bird rights that you've got on Jackson Hayes to spend your money first, then hang on to him. I think even if he winds up being slotted in as the third big, like that scenario we talked about with Rob Williams, it makes sense for the Lakers to hang on to Jackson Hayes. I thought he took a good step forward this year. He's not a perfect player by any means, but I feel pretty good about Jackson Hayes being at least in the big man rotation moving forward for LA.
Agreed. I mean, I think if we're looking at like order of operations, as you were saying, that it seems like Austin and Jackson are the two guys they would keep on a cap hold and make other moves. So I get it through like that lens. Where I would disagree is I would just say if it really comes down to fitting guys on the roster, like I think LeBron, Marcus, and Rui are better players and should be prioritized ahead of Jackson. I know that, I mean, those guys are also going to make a lot more money than Jackson, so that's where it gets a little tricky here. But to me, Jackson is a nice to have. He's not a must keep. He's not it's always tough with like he had a great game four, right? So it feels like weird kind of criticizing him.
That's the last thing we saw.
Like it's right. Like the lasting image of how great he was in game four. But we now, I mean, he got played off the floor against Minnesota last year, and I think he was better. You know, picked up where he left off in that like second half of the 2025 season, and did have some really good moments for LA over the course of the regular season. And you know, I sung his praises multiple times, and you know, outplayed DeAndre Ayton in many games, and closed over him in many games. But there was also points in both series where he looked unplayable. Like I think we'd be lying if like he did not play well games 1-3 of the OKC series. And there, like the middle point of the Houston series, his role got reduced and he was getting killed in the Şengün matchup. So point being is like from a regular season innings eater perspective, I think he has value. And I think that should be the primary use for him. From a playoff perspective, I still think it's an open-ended question whether like Jackson can actually play in the playoffs and or play like a certain role. You know, maybe he's your 9th or 10th man in a playoff rotation, but him being like an every night 15 plus minute backup, that's where I think there are still some questions with him.
Sure. Yeah. If you're telling me ultimately it comes down to Jackson Hayes or Marcus Smart or something, and that becomes the roster decision for whatever reason, financially or in terms of actually having roster spots to use, absolutely. I'm taking Marcus Smart. I'm taking, you know, of course, LeBron, right? Rui, absolutely. All those guys slot ahead of him, no question. Just in terms of using his cap hold, I think that's going to be something they'll be able to accomplish. But he's a guy that, is he the top priority outside of Reaves? No. I think he's a priority in terms of you can use his cap hold and not have to worry too much about the financials of it, whereas you need to prioritize the other guys ahead of him. So that would be a little, if it's truly in the Lakers' mind, if it's truly Reaves, Jackson Hayes, then LeBron James in terms of priority, I don't think it is, but that would certainly be a concern. All right, everybody. We've gone over time here. I am in the process right now of saving the super chats that we didn't get to. We'll try to address those this weekend. Jovan, thanks for sticking it out here. We were able to get through a lot on today's show, a lot getting ready for what's going to be a big offseason. And man, I can't wait. And I can't wait to cover it all here on the Lakers Collective.
Yes, sir. Good to see you. Good to see everybody in the chat. And yeah, we'll be back on Monday, I believe, if you know, we don't put something out over the weekend with the super chats. We'll be back on Monday with all three of us. And yeah, looking forward to whatever else comes out in the next few days, because it's promising to be a wild off season.
That's the thing about the Lakers, man. You never know what's going to come out, when it's going to happen. It's always a wild ride, but we appreciate all of you. Please make sure you do hit that subscribe button if you haven't done so yet. Till next time, everybody. See ya and stay safe.